All right, so just a little bit of a backstory before we get into the meat of the presentation as why we're doing what we're doing. So about 6 months ago, maybe 9 months ago by now, I was just going through some reflective thinking. I have said repeatedly to good friends of mine that I was, as I matured a little bit, I was very thankful for the parents that I had. I was extremely grateful. And like many of you, if you're a little bit older, I'm sure you didn't really appreciate your parents when you were younger or didn't appreciate them fully. And if you've had great parents, as you've aged a little bit, you've started to appreciate some of what they've given you. Not only that, if as your kids grow up, you've started to appreciate what you put your parents through. And so you understand a little bit more about the whole parenting dynamic. Well, there have always been a couple of things that I thought, you know, my mom and my dad never talked much about this. And I'm not talking about the weather, I'm talking about big life principles. Like, they were really good on certain things, and I could always look back and say, yeah, they gave me great guidance. Even when I rejected it, it was solid guidance. And to this day, I can live by some of the wisdom that my parents gave me. But then there was that other body of stuff that I came to be aware that they were just silent about. And keep in mind, this is during this time that I'm thinking through this. Then I started to ask myself, geez, I wonder what other things they didn't share with me. And I started to look at my own life and some of the things that I felt a little bit under-equipped when it concerns wisdom. And I thought, you know, come to think of it, they didn't really say much about that either. Or this or the other thing. And that led to the next question. I wonder how many people have that experience. And I would suspect everybody does. And wouldn't it be great if there was a collection of wisdom that every man could share with his kids, that every mom and dad together could share with their kids? What if we put some of this stuff together in one place so that we could share with men everything that a child needs to know? Because here's what I know about me, and here's what I know about all of you. If you have kids, you will teach your kids strongly the things that you're great at, the things that you understand well, the things that you think you've mastered. You might spend as much as 75 to 80% of your time sharing wisdom, whatever, however you do that, whenever you do that. You'll speak to your strengths. You might spend about 20% of time sharing with your kids those things that you think you need to improve on. In other words, don't look to me as the fount of wisdom on this, but there are some other things that maybe I need to steer you to somebody else. So you might spend 20% of your time talking about those areas where you're weak. But then there's that whole other body of wisdom. The things that you don't know, you can't share with your kids at all. Well, that led to the next question. When do you find out those things? When and where and how do you find out about the big life issue things? The wisdom that you need, when do you find out that you don't know it? Well, you usually find out when you bump right up against it, right? Wow, I know nothing about this. And it's usually at the most, have you ever noticed this? It's always at the most inconvenient of times when you discover what you didn't know. It's like it's almost too late. Well, I wish I would have learned that 10 years ago. But along that journey that you're experiencing, you have kids of your own. So let's say that you leave home, and we're going to actually look at some statistics in a moment. Let's say you leave home in your 20s and start kids, have a family, get married, have a family. Sometimes it's not in that order. Sometimes you have kids and then start a family. We're not advocating for that, but sometimes that's just the way it happens. So, you're in the middle of your journey of exploration and you start to share with your kids the things that you know. But what happens if you're well into your 40s or 50s and still bumping into things that you didn't know? And your kids are substantially raised and ready to leave home and you're just discovering these things on your own. What are you going to be able to give to them? None of that. And so the cycle of you didn't know and therefore you couldn't share is going to be repeated in their lives. And they're going to go out and they're not going to know and they're going to start to raise kids and they won't be able to share it either. So again, wouldn't it be great if we could put together a collection of the most important things that every father should know. And we are actually calling it What Every Father Should Know, because the reality is, I suspect that some of you will discover things in this first 6 weeks, or in the follow-up 6 weeks that we'll do in the winter, that you're not entirely familiar with. And so since we can't teach what we don't know, I'm hoping that maybe there'll be some new discoveries that you make while your children are still at a point where you can have influence over them. And so that's what we're going to look at tonight. So several weeks ago, my son took me out to dinner. That doesn't happen a lot. It was kind of a big deal. It was my birthday, actually. Well, it was a little bit after my birthday. And it wasn't my 40th or my 50th birthday either, and that's all I have to say on that. But anyway. So we're sitting there talking, and I was just asking him some questions about his life and how things were going, and we settled in on the subject of education. So he's going to school part-time, trying to pursue a business degree, and I asked him a little bit about how that was going, and then what his plans were for after he got that first degree. And he said, well, I might go back for some additional education. Now, the pragmatic person in me is just thinking about the money meter and all of that. Not that I'm responsible for it at this point, but I'm thinking, I wonder if he's done a cost-benefit analysis of this, but we didn't get into that because it was a pleasant evening. But he made this comment. He said, you know, good education teaches people how to do important stuff because, and this is what he said, successful people know how to do stuff. Well, that doesn't sound really profound, does it? But the reality is, it's very true. And he said, you know, when you go to the doctor knows how to do stuff. And what he meant was, the doctor knows how to do the really important stuff that you really hope he knows how to do when you go to him. And you trust him to do it. But he says, it's not just that. The plumber knows how to do plumbing, hopefully. Right? We've all encountered people that we'd say didn't know how to do stuff. Right? Haven't we? We've all forked over good, hard-earned money for people who didn't really know how to do stuff. But they thought they did. So successful people know how to do stuff. Let's just think about this in relationship to fathering. Here's some statistics, and don't rush ahead and assume that you know where I'm going with the statistics. Just let it play out. You see the relationship there? Average age for marriage, male 26 in 1990, it's 23 now. For females, I'm sorry, 29 now, and you see the numbers. And so it's risen about 3 years. Do those numbers tell a story? Just start to think about the story the numbers tell. What are the reasons why people may delay marriage? Do you suppose that all of the biological urges that people have are delayed those 3 years as well? Just asking a question. Just think about that. Here's another big statistic. It's pretty similar. Household formation. You know, household formation, and that's when a young couple decides to buy a house and start out on their own, household formation is significantly lower now than it was. So much so that housing experts actually are concerned because fewer and fewer people are starting out on their own at the age that it was expected. Because there's whole models that are built into the economy about when people are going to start on their own, when they need their first starter house. Which means that somebody's going to have to sell that starter house and move into a better house. And that's where new housing starts come into play. So I noticed when I was doing some research for this, the Britons actually have this phrase for it, failed fledglings. You know where that comes from, right? You know what a fledgling is? It's that bird that's ready to fly, and you know what the mama bird does? Today's the day. Out you go. I mean, we say it's cruel and cold when parents do that, but today's the day. Out you go. Here's another big statistic. Fewer young adults are able to find full-time employment that matches their needs, which contributes to the fact that fewer of them are able to launch out on their own. Now, I know you didn't come here to hear statistics, but the reality is, if we are going to help our children, if we are going to equip our children, we need to understand the world that they are going to go out into. Now, if you have teenage kids especially, this is not information that's probably going to be significantly out of date by the time they're ready to leave. You might even be, I don't know what your status is, you might be one whose kids have gone off to school and now they're back. And they're occupying the spare room or the basement. Or they're sort of like plying you to hope that they can move into the spare room or the basement. Now, why does this happen? Look at that statistic right there. And frankly, that surprised me that I thought it would be higher. Only 16%. Now, you might be shocked, but I'm thinking, you know what? Compared to some of the things that I've heard, that's actually not that bad. I mean, that's not an endorsement for great morals in this country by any means, but considering what we might have heard, considering what you see implied in popular entertainment, maybe that's not so bad after all. But you see the numbers there. Do you remember the numbers you saw before? The number of the age of marriage and all that? So you see what's happening. Remember what we said? Successful people know how to do stuff. I want you to think about the two most significant relationship structures that most people have. Marriage and kids. How much training and education did you get before you got married? But surely before you had your first kid, you got some training and education, right? Now, if that's not true, it almost begs the question, why? Why do we assume in this complex world, and those statistics, incidentally, here's what they say. The world is more complex than it used to be. It's more difficult today to live than it used to be. It's more difficult to equip for a young person to become equipped with the skills that they need to perform proficiently at a level that they will be able to care for themselves. Let alone care for themselves and perhaps start a family. Right? So let's not minimize the challenge of what our children are going to face. And yet when they get married, what training do they have? None. Now, we ask a couple to get married for how long? For life. What's going to equip them for that? And then we ask them to figure out how to have kids, and that's the easy part, but right then how to raise them without any additional training. How many of you have been to a fast food place in the last week? You know, the guy that stands behind the cash register and says, "Would you like fries with that?" He's gotten training to do that. And we want him to. We really do. And you probably think he didn't have any training, but he did. He might not have paid much attention to it, but he did have training. So think about this. We train people to take your order at a fast food place. We train people if they're going to fix your toilet. We train people if they're going to wire your house. As a matter of fact, we train young people before they can drive. Don't we? And yet for parents who are going to take care of from birth through the age of at least 18, who are going to instill in them a lot of the formative understandings about life, and it's a long process, right? A very long process. How many of you feel it's longer than you expected it to be? The years are the same number of years, but boy, doesn't a year feel like a long time when you've got some kids in the house sometimes. Would you agree with me that maybe we need to change that dynamic, that maybe there is some real education that's required if we want to do this well? So now ask yourself, what's at stake? So we'll come back to the fast food guy. Right? What's the worst that can happen if he doesn't do his job right? Right? You get a milkshake instead of a Pepsi. You get onion rings instead of fries. Maybe the meat's a little too poorly cooked or overcooked or undercooked. That's what's at stake. What's the worst that's at stake if your plumber does a bad job? Okay, it's a little bit more serious, isn't it? What's at stake when you raise a human being for 18 or 20 years? What's at stake there? What is the potential of that human being, and how is that potential either fulfilled or not fulfilled based on how parents equip their kids? Is there any comparison between the toilet and the kid? So what's your role in all this? And surprisingly, a lot of men aren't really sure what their role is. As a matter of fact, when most young men have kids, they're still trying to figure out their own life. Do you remember when you had your first kid? Were there any questions you had about your own life when you had your first kid? Were there things that you were unsure about yourself when you had your first kid? So we understand what's at stake. We need to be a little bit more clear about what a father's role is, and what is he going to have to learn to do in order to be an effective father? How will he know when he's succeeding? And let's just pause right there, and we have a small enough group so we could actually have some interaction. How do you know if you're succeeding as a dad? Have you ever asked that question? I'm sure you have. For some of you, it's probably kept you up at night. Do you have any standards that you're hoping for? Do you have any goals in mind? Do you have anything? Or are you just sort of flying by the seat of your pants and hoping for the best? So again, I came up with another question. Suppose you were Noah. Remember Noah? The big water storm guy, right? Boat. Animals, kids. Suppose you had three kids, and your three kids were going to repopulate the earth. And remember why the earth got flooded to begin with? Because people were behaving nastily and badly. Remember that? So suppose you were the parent of the three children that were going to repopulate the earth. How seriously would you take that role? What would you want your kids to know? What would you want them to avoid? What would be the traps that you think they might fall into, and you would want to be darn sure that they didn't repeat the mistakes of the past? So we have explored this, I don't know, countless times it seems like, in Saturday morning. But people tend to have to live with tensions. Now, we like either or, because either or means I'm going to do one thing or I'm going to do the other. But that's not really the way life works. Right? I mean, can you be either great at work or great at home? Does that work? What happens if you're either great at work or at home?
You get fired.
Or?
In either case.
Yeah, you get fired in either case, right? Pretty soon, you don't need to worry about the either or because one of those is taken care of for you. So if you want to be effective and successful at life, you can't have an either or life. You have to resign yourself to living with a certain amount of tension between responsibilities. There's the first responsibility that most men identify with, right? A provider. Now, I'm not saying this is true for you, but for a lot of men, that's it. That's the big deal. If I can just be a great provider, that gets me off the hook. There must be teachers and coaches. Remember what we said about a young man starting out? You will speak to your strengths. You will mention modestly those things that you don't know that much about, and you will be entirely silent about those things that you know nothing about. So how can a man fulfill that second role if he doesn't even know what he needs to know, let alone what his kids need to know? And finally, they need to love and enjoy their children. Have you ever had that day when by the time you were done being the provider, the guardian, perhaps the teacher and coach, There was very little room for love and enjoyment left in that day's relationship. And so somehow we have to master the ability to live within all those tensions and get them figured out. They must do each without neglecting the other. And this is a big one. We have to provide for our children in the present while we prepare them for the future. What's the end result of every child? What's the end game of every child? To become an adult. That's it. To become an adult. We all know parents. We're going to assume they're all out there. Out there. None of them in here. But we all know parents who are so busy living in the moment that they're not thinking about the direction and the destination of their children. The destination of every one of your children is to be an adult. And yes, we get to live with them and enjoy them for a little bit. But this is the big thing. You're not just raising children. See, when we talk about raising corn, what are we doing? We refer to it as the finished product. We raise horses or livestock of some type. How many of you have ever used the phrase raising children? And don't we do that? Is that really what you're raising? Is that what you hope that they will be for the rest of their lives? And the answer is, of course not. So we're really not raising children. We are raising human beings who in this moment happen to have the form of children. But their final outcome, their final destination is to be adults. Do you remember the statistic before about the number of people that are still living at home? The number who haven't started a family of their own? The number who aren't married? Now, in part, it's because of the complexity of life. But there's another big reason. We've created a generation, and you're familiar with the phrase, we've created a generation that doesn't know how to launch. And we've done it because we have been more focused on making them content in the moment and living for the moment than we have equipping them to be adults. So what's an adult? It's a small group. We can have some interaction.
One is 18 years of age. Minimum. Generic.
Okay, so we've got one vote in here. It says 18 years of age. Now, technically that's true. You and I have probably within the last 24 hours met somebody who is 24 years old, and yet we would not say that they meet the qualifications of adulthood. Is there more then?
Maturity.
Maturity.
Responsibility.
Oh, there it is. Responsibility. Yes, they can take care of themselves. We'll get to that in a moment. The day that your kid turns 16 and he says, I'd like to drive a car. I mean, after the emotional trauma is settled and you're ready to deal with that, right? And you've known it's coming for a long time. So if you weren't prepared for it the day they first say that, you've just been living in denial. Well, they get a driver's license. What does a driver's license mean?
You can operate a car.
Does it mean they're good drivers? It doesn't, does it? So I'm going to ask the question again. What is implied by issuing someone a driver's license?
They know the basics.
They know the basics. Let me say it a different way. They know enough that hopefully they won't kill themselves or somebody else while they continue to practice driving until they actually get good at it. We're men, so we can deny that. That certainly wasn't true for each of us. But other people, right? Women especially. But that's a different topic. So a driver's license is really a pre-qualifier that says, I think you know how to do this well enough that you can do it on your own without somebody attending to it. and hopefully you won't do irreparable harm to yourself or someone else. And isn't that what we're implying when we say that we are raising adults? Right? The day that you became responsible for yourself, did you know everything about how to live well? Do you have at least a decade or two of your life's history that proves that you didn't know how to do everything well? And so that is really our objective. Our objective is to input enough good stuff into our kids' lives, give them opportunity to practice the stuff that we're giving them, so that the day that they launch, and they need to launch, they need to launch. Let's just say that again. They need to launch. They don't want to be 30 and living in your basement. They need to have enough good stuff inside of them so that they won't do irreparable harm to themselves or to others as they practice being adults. So that begs the next question. Okay, who is teaching them how to do that? Now we assume the schools do that, right? We assume that the schools do a lot of that. And it's true to a certain extent. One of the illustrations, I believe I used it with you a few weeks ago, but I'll use it again. If organized education was all that kids needed, would you agree that knowing how to manage money is important in life?
Yes.
Do you know when most young adults have their first encounter with financial mismanagement? It's when they go away to college and they get their first credit card. Right? I mean, statistically, that's when it happens. Now, if a good education was all that it took for an adult to be a practicing adult that didn't do harm to himself or to others, wouldn't you think that the one place that that wouldn't ever occur was on a campus where they're getting educated? What does that reveal to us? That there's an entire body of education that is not being taught in school. And so some of us think, well, then the church will do it. How many hours, Jeremy, do you have our kids for a week? In a week? 1 hour. The ones that won't leave class, maybe an hour and 15 minutes. The ones that their parents don't ever pick up, 2 hours or more. How much can you do in an hour a week? Do you know what Jeremy's job is, actually? Jeremy's job should be to reinforce what kids have already learned at home and to perhaps reshuffle the deck a little bit and give them a little bit of additional understanding about what they've already learned at home. So just think about this. So suppose you wanted to own a pistol, okay? And so you went away to school. And in that school, you learned all about how to fire a gun. You learned how to take the gun apart, put it back together. You learned how to load your own bullets. You learned all the sophisticated little details about all that. You learned everything about how to disassemble and reassemble and clean a gun. How to shoot a gun. How to shoot a gun from any condition in every situation. Is that all you need to know? What else do you need to know? Who said that?
When
you
use it.
That's it. Schools provide excellent, and I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, and if you don't agree with me, that's okay, but we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt because it's a tough job educating kids. Schools give our children an excellent technical education. It's the equivalent of teaching the kid how to fire the gun, how to take the gun apart and put it back together. But no school teaches your kids when to use the gun, when not to use the gun, when not even to have the gun in your possession because you might be tempted to use it at an inopportune time. Whose job would that be? That would be the job of a parent. And in the same way, great schools equip our children with the technical expertise that they will need to go out and get a job. Can a person do a lot of harm with a gun if they don't have the right moral and ethical guidelines? You bet. Do we see a lot of examples out there of young wives that are on the rocks, that are frustrated, that are disappointed, that are confused in life? Why? Because they got a great technical education, but they didn't get any moral input to help them understand how to use what they got, when to use what they got, or even what their purpose was. So instead of thinking of your family and your home life as simply this collection of stuff, what if you considered it as more like a laboratory where your kids got to experiment with being adults, where it was still safe? Because before we issue the driver's license, what do? We sit in the car with the kid. Or we get our wife to do it because it's uncomfortable for us. But somebody sits in the car with the kid and helps them to drive because they're not ready yet. What if we started to think of our homes as that time where we sat with the children and helped them to practice being adults by setting up experiments, processes, examples for them to consider about how to be adults? Here's the next question. Who's teaching you what your kids need to know? We've already established what schools do. I believe that it is a role that the church must embrace. And when I say the church, it's things like this. I don't mean that Jeremy should be there teaching your kids. What I mean is that the one thing that the church is uniquely qualified to do is speak about matters of the heart, matters of the spirit, matters of the inner man. The church is not well equipped to teach computer science. It's not well equipped to teach biology or anything. The one thing the church is well equipped to do is teach matters of soul and heart. And that means teaching it to adults as well as to children. And it means teaching men what their role is in the home and how they can do it well. Because here's what we know about men, and you've heard me say this before. A man will walk away from something he's not particularly good at, because who wants to be a loser? So if you're struggling to be a father, a lot of fathers will disengage at the point where they start to struggle and don't have an answer. I'm not even going to ask, but maybe some of you have disengaged at least for a while because you simply did not know what to do. Where do you turn when you don't know what to do? I mean, when I don't know how to do something yet, today I Google it, right? But if you Google how to be a great dad, I don't suspect you're going to find what you're looking for there. I mean, there might be a YouTube video, but it's probably a comedy of errors. It's really not serious. So where do you turn when you don't know what to do? Where do you turn when you're out of answers? The reason many men are frustrated is because 100 years ago, it was a lot easier to be a father. I really believe that. You know, most people had fewer options 100 years ago. And they had fewer opportunities to take advantage of those options 100 years ago. See, if you have a person who is essentially confined by their societal circumstances, they're not as likely to act out. Imagine the young couple in high school 60 years ago and the girl got pregnant. Was that a common event? She was pretty much shamed almost, right? Completely. And so it was much easier to say no. What about today? It's really hard not to say yes. And I'm picking the low-hanging fruit here. There's dozens of examples of the freedoms that our kids have today, the opportunities that our kids have today that they didn't even have to think about 50 years ago. Who's going to be there to help them? That's our job. Do you see why it's harder? And in addition to that, have you ever noticed that most of what you try to instill in your kids in the home is undermined by what they learn in school or in society? Right. So while you're trying to teach great values, what are they learning in school? What are they learning when they turn on the television? They're learning something entirely different. And so your job is not only to be able to teach matters of the heart, but your job is then to be able to offer explanations for why what's out there is wrong. 60 years ago, everybody just accepted the fact that you waited until you were married. Right? Because things like the one girl that got pregnant was why you didn't do that. It's a whole different ballgame today. And I got to tell you, most of us are undereducated and under-equipped for the job that we're trying to do. And that's not a put-down. That's just a reality based on where we are in society and the demands of being a father. That's a big one. So if I wait until I am something to start to prepare for it, I'm starting behind before I ever start. So when do I start to prepare my children to be adults? When they're very young. Not at the risk of... I mean, this is not... For some of you, you're probably feeling uncomfortable and thinking that I'm suggesting that you turn them into regimented little soldiers. No, I'm not. Not at all. But if I wait until they're 16 or 17 and say, okay, now it's time to get serious about life. Not so. You got to knuckle down. Now it's almost too late. That bus has left the terminal. And it's not coming back. And your opportunity to do some stuff is significantly diminished. Now, here's the other thing. Get rid of the outdated antivirus. When's the time to start to prepare to be a father? I know, for some of you it's too late, right? Wouldn't it be better to start today? I'm going to just put that on hold for a minute. I'm not sure where in the outline it shows up, but it seems like an appropriate time to introduce this idea right now. Anybody want to hazard a guess as to what the difference is, the primary difference between formal and informal education? Okay, that's an interesting definition.
One you pay for, one you don't.
Ah, right. Any others?
How to do it, or when to do it.
Okay. Let me see.
That bridge.
One teaches technical skills, the other teaches soft skills.
We've gotten quite a collection. Let me suggest this one thing. In formal education, somebody else determines the curriculum. So suppose that you want to be, I don't know, a rocket scientist. That's really a lame example, but just suppose you wanted to do that. Is there a career track that takes you there? Is there an educational track that takes you there? Yes, there is. And someone else sets the course curriculum because they know what it takes to take you to that direction. Informal education? Have you chosen to learn anything since you're an adult? And the operative word sometimes is chosen. See, the person who goes for formal education doesn't even know all the things that they need to know. And so someone else has to help them to discover the things that they didn't know that they needed to learn to put them on the right path to success. When it comes to informal education, we tend to learn what we want to learn, what we're interested in learning. And when do we usually do that? Business people do this a lot, I know. Especially people who do startup stuff. They do it a lot. There it is. I'm going to do this, and I guess I'll figure it out as I go along. Which means you're constantly bumping into what you don't know. And you're figuring it out as you go along. So I want to ask you again. It's just a different way of asking the same question I've asked a dozen times already. How many of you feel that way as parents at times? How many of you want to feel that way forever? You want to feel that way forever?
Oh, forever?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I think so. I want to continue growing and how I can help prepare my children.
But when I'm constantly bumping into... Have your kids ever surprised you with questions that you found ill-equipped to answer?
Where did babies come from?
But you knew how to answer that. You just didn't want to answer that. That's different. See, your children are living out in a world that's putting ideas into their minds. There's nothing wrong with that. But they're going to come home to you and they're going to challenge you. There's a time, maybe about 30 or 40 years ago, and I hope I don't step on anybody's toes, where I think the church lost touch with its ability to influence the culture because it rested too long on "because God said so." And the reality is that a lot of people said "because God said so" because they didn't even really have a credible answer for why God might have said so. But children today are not going to buy into that. Because they've already got plenty of people that are telling them that there is no God. So when they come home to your house and you say "because God's word says so," and that's all the answer you've got, and you can't even explain why it would make sense that God would say so, can I suggest that you're underwater and in deep trouble at that moment? Because at that moment you've lost the power to influence your kids. Oh, it was next. How about that? So what are we after? We've got six items that we're going to deal with in the first round of this course. So if you have on your table there, the thing that cleverly says 6-week course outline, I just want to introduce you to some of the topics because I'm hoping that many of you are going to want to get plugged into a group. We were made for relationships, and you can take the time to read through that on your own. It's going to talk to every man about the value of relationships, how to help your kids excel at interpersonal relationships, starting with themselves. And you might think that that's really an odd place to begin, but you see, if I don't have a good relationship with myself because I have been given an identity and a purpose through Christ, then everyone else becomes competition or somebody that I need to feel inferior to. If I'm not secure in who I am, do you remember what it was like going through high school? Right? If you were the top dog in high school, it was probably a blast. I was not. High school was not. Yes. Big surprise, right? I was not. High school was not fun. High school really sucked, honestly. Right? Some of you know what I'm talking about. If you're not the top dog, then what do you all? You always feel a little inferior, and you're always trying to manipulate or gain some advantage or do something to get ahead. We want to instill in our kids a solid identity so that they're comfortable with who they are. Because out of that comfortable identity gives them the ability to relate well to others. I don't need to use other people. I don't need to live in fear of other people because they're better than I am. And as a matter of fact, I know that because God has made me unique and distinct, I actually have things of value to give to other people. And so they will genuinely appreciate what I have to give to them. And some of you are thinking, well, maybe I don't even feel that way about myself right now. And that's why it's important that we do this. The next thing, we were designed for work. We want to look at that. How many of you spend at least 8 hours a day at work? Some more, right? So something that important we want to spend time talking about. To give our kids the right ideas about work. To challenge our own parental assumptions about what we think about work and the kinds of conversations that we have in our own homes about work. Quick quiz here. How many of you have had a grumble fest in your home within the last 30 days between you and your wife about your work? Aren't you self-employed? What happens when our kids are listening to that? Just think about that. What happens when our kids are listening to the way that we talk about work? Before they've ever had their first job, they're already starting to form impressions and ideas about what it means to work and why it is or is not important to work and what the purpose to work is. The fruit of labor. Here's one of the ones that, remember I said when I started this, that there were some things that my mom and dad did not do well for me? There's a big difference between knowing how to make money and knowing how to manage the money that we've made. Do you know people who make twice what you do and are still broke? Living paycheck to paycheck? Now, if you can live paycheck to paycheck, why can't they have surplus? And if somebody that's living on less than you are can live paycheck to paycheck, why don't you have surplus? See, it's not only how much we make, it's how we manage what we've made once we've made it. And our kids need to understand that. Otherwise, we've set them up for failure. I have to tell you a story about my older son. My older son and his wife. And I'll make it very brief. Very brief. Details are going to be left out. But we'll just say that my son got married, left home, had a kid, found that life was more than he could afford, and came home. And we had an agreement that we would give him time to relaunch. We had a few financial discussions. Now the amazing thing is, I thought I did a really good job talking to him about finances, but I intentionally did it, and he still failed. So if you don't address it at all, I'll guarantee you've set your kids up for failure in that regard. It all begins with the heart. Two topics we're going to look at there, character and attitude. Your attitude, and this is a metaphor that I think is very appropriate, your attitude is a lot like some mud on your work boots. You ever had a pair of Vibram sole work boots? And it gets mud jammed up in there. And what happens to that mud? It's there. And wherever you go, the mud goes with you. You ever walked in the house and not realized what was on your feet? Maybe you've been out in the backyard and you have a dog, and then you walk in the house and you didn't realize what was on your feet. And then pretty soon what you didn't know was on your feet is now all over the carpet. And that's kind of the way it is with our attitude. Your attitude, good or bad, goes with you wherever you go, and a piece of it remains behind. You ever started out your day great, and then you come in contact with you-know-who at work, and it's all downhill from there? Your attitude matters. That's a great gift to teach our kids. Week number 5. Failing doesn't have to be fatal. Every child who is a budding adult needs to learn how to fail well and what to learn from failure. And what we're going to explore in that week is the fact that most of public education teaches the wrong message about failure. It's essential in that classroom to understand it in that way, but most of the rest of life, failure does not look that way. But most kids are inoculated and fearful of failure from the moment they leave public education, and they will never take big risks from that point on because of a fear of failure, because they don't understand how to manage failure well. And finally, and if you'll notice, just like in week 4, we have to combine two things because honestly, I was torn between two different topics and I couldn't pick which one, so I figured, well, we'll just lump them into one. Self-discipline and gratitude yield happiness and greater contentment. It's something every one of our children needs to understand. Because when you're young, self-discipline is the antithesis of fun. And yet, what I've discovered as I've gotten older is that some of the most happy and successful people are extremely self-disciplined. Doesn't sound logical, but it's true. And corollary to that, that whenever people are discontent, they've generally taken their eyes off of what they already have and are focusing exclusively on what they don't have. And you cannot live with a bad case of the wants and be happy. Because your wants dominate your thinking. And it's not bad to want. But we need to live with a sense of perpetual gratitude for what we already have. And that isn't a lesson that's learned naturally. We as parents will have to share those ideas with our kids and give them a chance to practice.